DNA kits are popular gifts over the holiday season, and since the pandemic, many people are spending time on their family research, and this could make it easier to connect with your DNA matches. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Mary Eberle back with us to help you on your search for your roots. She's a DNA expert who finds birth parents of adoptees. She's also the founder of DNA Hunters Society. It's a community helping people find answers to their family questions with DNA. So what questions do you have about your DNA kit? What do you want to know about the DNA testing process? Do you need help finding information about your family ancestry? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Mary Eberle, welcome back. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Larry. It's great to be back.
Well, tell us a little about your work. What services do you provide for clients?
Well, I have clients who they've got mysteries in their family, or maybe they just want to know how their DNA, what their DNA results mean. So I do one-to-one client research for those clients. I also speak, although during the pandemic, that's been turned into a lot of virtual speaking as opposed to in-person conferences. And then, as you mentioned, I have the new DNA Hunters Society, and that's that community where people receive ongoing education and support for using DNA for family research. And that's an online community, and so it's been a pivot in terms of my business, and it's been really nice to see people because I'm using Zoom and I can see their faces. So it's a really nice community, and you know, nice to be interacting with people again.
Yeah, for sure. Well, what are some of the common questions that folks come to you with that you consider or you can answer through DNA testing?
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of my clients were adopted, and they're looking for one or more birth parent. And through their DNA tests, I'm able to figure out who their birth parents are. Sometimes my clients are actually the child of an adoptee, so an adult child, and their parent has passed away, but their parent had always wanted to know who their biological parents were. And by looking at the DNA results of the adoptee's children, and again, it's adult children, I'm able to figure out who those birth parents were. You know, so in that case, it's actually figuring out the biological grandparent. And some clients have a mystery further back in their tree. So let's say they don't know who their second great grandparents were. Or I had a really interesting case this year where a client's husband had a family story that one of his second great grandparents was a French adoptee who was given away to a Mexican family during the gold rush.
And oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was fascinating. And I got to learn about these towns outside of Sacramento that were gold mining towns. And it was pretty amazing because I was able to pinpoint these two sisters who had come to this country from Paris, you know, so we've got the French connection. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. We couldn't exactly narrow it down between those two sisters, but based on those sisters' families, so, you know, one had married, she had been with the same husband, you know, she had children, she stayed with the children, whereas the other sister had multiple marriages, you know, children who stayed back in Paris with her parents. And, you know, so based on that, we figured that it was probably that second sister.
Oh man, that is pretty interesting. Lynn in Wausau has a question for you. Let's go there. Lynn, hi.
Hi. I have a question about people who are native to North and South America. I have an adopted daughter from Peru who came from a small town in the Andes and is probably mostly indigenous. I have an adopted granddaughter from Colombia who appears much more Peruvian, more Caucasian. And I'm just wondering if any of the ancestry sites would have a better database for people like that.
I would say that historically we used to turn to 23andMe for questions like that. But more recently, Ancestry has done a really good job of putting together samples of indigenous people from North America and South America, and they're able to identify specific communities of native people. So it's not down to the tribe level. It's not something that you can use to become a member of a tribe. But at the same time, it gives you a geographical perspective about what native heritage somebody might have. The other question
No, go ahead.
The other question is finding those DNA matches. And the majority of people who are in our DNA databases are people of Northwestern European heritage. And that means that if you also have that heritage, you will have more matches and closer matches. And that could make it difficult if you were, for example, looking for the birth parents of these children who were adopted from South America or Central America. It might be much more difficult, if not impossible, to find really close relatives. But you might find a second or a third or a fourth cousin. And, that's biologically, that's more than they had prior to testing.
Yeah, for sure. Lynn, thank you. Rich in Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Rich.
Hi, I had a simple DNA test, a kind of teaser kit that I sent in. It cost me about $53, and I didn't get, and it was from a major company that does DNA testing, Ancestry.com. But I'm wondering what you would recommend as the very best service for the very most comprehensive results, and what I should expect to pay for what is essentially a saliva sample being sent in order to get really good comprehensive results.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you actually got a good deal on that DNA test. Typically, they're closer to $100. So I assume that you were taking advantage of one of those sales that the companies have. I think what you paid is a really good price. And I also like the fact that you tested at Ancestry. And that's because Ancestry has the largest database of people who have done DNA testing, which means you're going to get more matches compared to other companies. And they also have some really good tools for analyzing your DNA test results. The downside of Ancestry is that if you want to take full advantage of your results and look at them and reach out to your matches and see the family trees of your matches and do the hard work that we do in analyzing the matches, then you have to pay them a subscription. So you have to subscribe to Ancestry, and that costs money, obviously.
Well, we'll talk some more about that after our little break here with our guest, Mary Eberle, DNA expert, who finds birth parents of adoptees, among other things. It's great to have her with us. And we're going to take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us. Then we'll be back. She can talk some more about ancestry and answer your questions as well. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking about tools that are available for tracing your ancestry today. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Our guest, Mary Eberle. She's a DNA expert who finds birth parents and adoptees. She's also founder of DNA Hunters Society. It's a community helping people find answers to their family questions with DNA. So, what was your DNA testing experience like? What questions or comments do you have about DNA and ancestry? Maybe having problems climbing your family tree? Give a call, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Mary, anything you wanted to add to your comments on ancestry? You were talking about the fact that you have to become a subscriber in order to get the more detailed information, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. That's right. You have to subscribe. And the other places where you can test, which include 23andMe, Family Tree DNA, MyHeritage, and also Living DNA, don't have that requirement of having that subscription. So like with everything in life, we have the pros and the cons. And I always recommend starting at Ancestry. And if that doesn't provide you enough information or enough matches to answer your questions, then I recommend that people either test at one of those other companies, or if they can, transfer their DNA results into one of those companies from Ancestry.
Oh, that's another. You can actually do that.
Right, right. Certain companies allow you to transfer results from another company. So the companies that do not allow those transfers are Ancestry and 23andMe.
Okay. All right. Diane in Rice Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Larry and Mary. Happy to talk to you today. This is an interesting topic to me. I'm 74 years old. I have a younger sister and brother. And about 2 years ago, my sister went through Ancestry. And she was surprised when she didn't have the Scandinavian background, which we believed we were. So I went ahead and did a little research. I went through 23andMe, and that came back with a substantial amount of the Scandinavian background. So I told my sister, why don't you try 23andMe, which she did, and then came back with a similar profile to mine. And she decided to check and see if our brother would do it also, which he did. And so the three of us are all in the 23andMe system. But subsequently, 23andMe came out and said that they believe that my sister and brother are my half sister and brother. So I understand the implications of that, but I'm confused because it just doesn't seem right to us. If you look at our percentages, they're so close. But one more thing that has happened is that a known uncle, which would have been my dad's brother, his son and his son's son all came up as relatives to my brother and sister, but do not come up as relatives to me. So So my question is, how accurate is that particular predictor? I'm at a point in my life, I don't have genetic children, just adopted children, where it's not a huge issue for me personally, but it is sort of interesting.
Yeah.
What do you say, Mary?
Well, thank you for calling and bringing this up. I think that it's a, well, I will first say that if two people who are at least second cousins test at the same DNA testing company, they will be in each other's match list 100% of the time. So a sibling, of course, is much closer, and a half sibling is much closer than a second cousin. And that means that they should show up in your match list. And the nephew from your father's side should have also shown up in your match list. So it looks like maybe you discovered a family secret through your DNA test.
Hmm.
Okay. So, Mary, you're telling me that you think they're probably correct, and you would put the percentage at about 100%. Am I saying it right?
That they're calling your siblings half siblings?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes, I would say that they are correct. And
okay.
At that level also. So I'm
okay.
Yeah, that's a big discovery, and yes.
That's
what happens, you know, especially when DNA tests are given to people, you know, they might not have even had a thought that the father who raised them wasn't their biological father. And then they test, and then these family secrets come out. And oftentimes the parents aren't around anymore to question about, you know, what does this mean? What happened? But through the DNA matches, we're almost always able to figure out who the biological relative should be.
All right.
As I mentioned in that earlier story about the French orphan, in that case, we were able to narrow it down to these two sisters. So sometimes that happens also, where I can narrow things down to a small group of people like that, for example, brothers or sisters, but I can't quite come to one person in terms of who is the biological parent mm-hmm. or grandparent. But that is quite a bit of the work that I do in my client work and also when I'm teaching, is how to look at your matches and figure out who those missing people are.
And this is quite a revelation to hear it on the air, Diane, I'm sure, but one thing, the father that you had who raised you is you should consider your father.
Oh, I already do, and I wouldn't have called if I had any real personal feelings
good.
Here. My father
good.
Is my father, and good. But I'm just a little curious. So, what would be my next step?
Well, I would look at the matches that you don't have in common with your siblings. And we start out with the closest matches. So let's say you have a first cousin or a second cousin that you have, but your siblings don't have. Well, those would be from your biological father's side. And then once people like that are identified, then we're looking for the ancestors that are common to those matches. And on 23andMe, it's not quite, it's not as easy as on Ancestry. Ancestry has a lot of family trees attached to people's DNA or associated with people's DNA. And that lets us look through the trees of the matches to see who are the common ancestors or the common surnames or the common locations. And through those trees of the matches, we're able to identify the common ancestors, build those trees back far enough. And then what's interesting about doing this kind of work is that we're actually building trees forward in time, right? So most of the time we're building our tree back as far as we can go. You know, if people say, I have my tree built back to 1500. Mm-hmm. Well, when we're looking for biological relatives, we're actually doing that, building it back, but then we're coming forward in time to find the descendant who would be the right gender and also be the right age and be in the right place to be the biological parent.
There you go, Diane. Some work ahead for you, but thank you very much for calling. It's probably something that comes up reasonably often, Mary.
Right. Yes. One of the very first people I worked with was in a similar situation. And she had some interesting matches, and she also had the lack of some matches, the same way Diane had. And in the end, we pulled together enough information to conclude that the father who raised her wasn't her biological father. Yeah. And she actually, she wrote a short memoir about it called The Magician's Daughter. So I've been the subject of a book, which never happened before.
Very interesting.
Yeah, all of the family stories and, you know, trying to figure out, like, what, you know, what happened. It's just fascinating.
Patty in Dodgeville, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Patty.
Hi. Thank you for having this program. I'm interested in a couple things. My mother married my biological father, and she was married to him a little over a year, and then she divorced him, and she moved far away from him. And I never had any contact with him. And there's a couple of things I'm interested in. My mother thought that his father was Native American. So I'm interested in finding out if he has... if he was part Native American. And the second thing was, I was interested in finding out if he was still alive, and I ended up going to the Veterans Administration, and he killed himself when I was 13, so there's no way I would ever be able to see him. But I went through all of his death records, and he had a family before me, a daughter and a son. And then after my mother divorced him, he remarried and had three children. Well, I'm not, my name is not in the death records, only the wives and the children of the first and third wives. So I'm interested in how I would be able to put my name in there on his record.
Oh boy,
what do you think?
I'm not sure about that. I guess I would contact the agency that has the records to see what proof they would need in order to change it. You know, it could be that if you supplied the marriage license of your parents, your biological father and your mother, that they might amend the record. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's something to try, Patty. Good luck. Thank you. Laura in Madison, your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi. So my question is, I'm interested in using one of these services, but my kids are actually pretty concerned about privacy issues in terms of having our DNA like out there for anybody to access, and that includes like personal relationships, but also there have been cases where law enforcement has used DNA records to trace folks, and yeah. Also medical access to DNA for medical research or pharmaceutical research. So how much control can I actually have over who accesses this information? And I know there's probably people out there that don't really want to find new siblings.
Sure.
So can you speak to some of that?
Sure. And thank you for bringing up that issue. We have seen law enforcement using the genealogy DNA databases in order to identify criminal suspects and criminal victims. So we have identified a lot of Jane Does and John Does through the DNA databases of the genealogy companies or community. What we know for sure is that Family Tree DNA is allowing the FBI to upload samples to their database and find matches to those samples, so crime scene samples. We know that GEDmatch, which is a third-party website, is also allowing law enforcement to access their database. I just read last week, but I haven't confirmed this, that MyHeritage was also doing that. So I need to look into that to see if that is accurate. So we've got law enforcement. This past year or so, we saw the identification of the Golden State Killer through genetic genealogy, through these databases. And so we have that. We have that situation. It's important to read the terms of service to see what the company is going to allow or not allow. But at the same time, we've had instances where the company's terms of service said one thing, and then they didn't follow their terms of service with respect to law enforcement. In terms of medical research, we know that 23andMe has contracts with many pharmaceutical companies to do research, research on various diseases in order to identify the genetic causes of them. And again, there's a way to opt out in terms of what you want to be done with your DNA. But I always say that if you are worried about those things, that the safest thing to do is to not submit your DNA into those databases, because we just, you know, you lose control of exactly what's going to happen. I would also say that a couple of the companies have said that they will not allow law enforcement to access their databases without a warrant. And a warrant is obtained from the judge, and, you know, they're not going to fight the warrant if they're forced, like any other company, they're forced to divulge information, they will.
Yeah. There you go, Laura. Thank you very much for calling. Well, you've had some workshops in the past. You talked about them earlier, some virtual. Any plans to progress with future workshops?
Well, I was talking the other day to Lori Bessler from the Wisconsin Historical Society, and we were talking about maybe in the fall of 2021 doing a workshop. So there's that. This past year, I spoke for the Dallas Genealogical Society and the Florida State Genealogical Society from my home office. So I do have engagements. I have a couple in Illinois this month. I keep everything on my website under the events tab. So when I'm speaking, the event should be on that events tab of DNAHunters.com. And then, as I mentioned, with the DNA Hunters Society and that community, there's ongoing education, which includes weekly expert classes, twice monthly Q&A sessions. There's a video library covering topics like, you know, how to interpret your results at company A, or what kind of DNA to use to answer these questions. And, you know, it's a lot of material. There are over 17 videos in that library. Yeah, we've got lots. The famous Roots Tech Conference, which is held in February, and it's held in Salt Lake City traditionally. That is now all virtual and all free. So people might want to check that out. Yeah, that's
We'll have you go to DNAHunters.com. Mary, thank you. I hope you'll be back and be with us again. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Larry. Thanks so much. It's been great.
Mary Eberle, her website, www.DNAHunters.com. Thank you for listening. Sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's always the case. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mehler.